Welcome to Star Talk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk begins right now. This is Star Talk Radio. I'm your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson. I'm an astrophysicist with the American Museum of Natural History, where I also serve as director of Hayden Planetarium. We're here at Star Talk. I think of it as Star Talk After Hours, but in fact, it's Star Talk Cosmic Queries. And I've got with me in studio the one, the only, Leanne Lord. Leanne!
Hey, I like that, the one and only.
The one and only, Leanne Lord, especially since you spell your name L-E-I-G-H-A-N-N.
Thank you. I can't take credit for that. That's my parents.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
And I make a point of that because if you want to follow Leanne on Twitter, you got to spell her name right.
That's okay. Right.
She's at Leanne Lord. Easy to find, easy to follow once you get the letter. Right. It's great to have you on here.
Oh, it's so nice to be here.
So you make a living as a professional comedian.
I make a living as a professional comedian.
That is awesome.
That is crazy.
Bringing laughter where it's needed most in
exactly,
the world.
Exactly. It's not rocket science, but, you know, people need it.
I like following you. Where you go around the country and the world.
Thank you.
You've been to the Middle East?
I've been to the Middle East.
The troops? That
I
is
have.
So Bob Hope of you.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
And they really are a great audience. I love doing it.
Yeah, very appreciative. And so it's great to have you here. So this Cosmic Queries segment, we're going to talk about pseudoscience. Yeah.
Ooh, how many hours do we have?
I know,
for this
right,
topic?
Right. So it's stuff that people think is science, but in fact isn't. They want it to be science.
Right.
But science is actually knows quite well what it is and how mm-hmm. it works and how the methods and tools apply. And so a big effort of people who are trying to sort of the debunkers out there are to try to show people what science is and how we know what we know and how we know what we don't know. All right. How
do we know what we know?
No. It's how we know what we know and how we know that we don't know something. Okay? That's just as important.
That's true.
Yes, it is. So we've called questions from the internet. On the internet, we are startalkradio.net. You can chat with us there. There's a blog, places to deposit your questions and comments. There's the archive of our past shows are there as well. Also on Facebook, you can like us there, Star Talk Radio. That's easy to get to. And, of course, we're in the Twitterverse, Star Talk Radio. I also tweet, if you have patience for my cosmic brain droppings. They're
brilliant.
No. they're not related. They're just stuff that floats in and out of my head, and I have a medium to put them. That's all it is, a repository for my brain dropping.
Your tweets make me stop and stare into space because I'm like, wait a minute.
Well, not while you're driving.
Oh,
right?
Well, no. Yeah, because I'm tweeting while driving. What? No.
So these questions, I think these all came from Facebook. Is that correct?
These look like they are all Facebook questions. Yes, they are.
Yeah, and I haven't seen them before, so this will all be very fresh.
Good.
And if I can't answer one, I'll say I can't answer it.
Okay, mm-hmm. That's fair.
By the way, while I have a lot of thoughts to share about pseudoscience, there are people out there who do this professionally. So this is just a service to our listeners.
Yes.
But there are books written by folks who, for example, Michael Shermer, who wrote Why People Believe Weird Things.
Yes.
The title very similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
Go find him on you can find, and in there, customers who bought that book also bought. So if you look at the rest, there's a whole slew of ways you can sort of read up on this. So let's see how well I can do for
yes.
this go.
All right. We have the first question here is from Benjamin Camacho Garcia. And he says,
look at you, Garcia.
Garcia. Just put a little Spanish flair on it there.
Mm-hmm.
Now he says, we know all kinds of pseudoscience are garbage, but which one do you find more entertaining and which one would be the most dangerous to practice?
Okay, the one I think is most entertaining is the Ouija board.
Okay, we're going old school. All
old
right.
school, yeah, right. yeah. Not.
You I didn't expect that.
Don't even have to plug that one in.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the Ouija board where people gather around a table and you put your and it's on your lap, I guess, if I remember how you do this. It's touching your knees. No,
it's on a table.
I did it when it's on a knee. But you put it on a table.
Mm-hmm.
No. You've got to.
Well, you have the board, and then you have your hands on the little device. Everybody has to touch the pointer.
Oh, right. Okay, that's one version of it. When I first did it, that object on the board mm-hmm. would move by gravity. So the board would tilt and it would slide to the letters on the board. Like sort of group movement.
Yes.
So I think that's just, it's a fun party thing. It's like playing Twister, except.
Without the inappropriate contact.
Without the inappropriate, And so I kind of like the Ouija board. And of course it's your, what they did was, it turns out if you're blind, the Ouija board doesn't work very well for you.
So what are the odds?
Yeah, you're influencing where the puck lands
right.
on it because you can actually see it. And it turns out if you don't know how to spell well, you actually misspell the words while you – there are fascinating experiments you can do that just summarily debunk the entire process. Like, so for example, are you channeling someone else's words through your ability to communicate through the Ouija board, and you find out they misspell the same words that you do?
Yes, love it.
Yeah, so unless your spelling profile exactly matches that of the dead person whose spirit you're channeling, this is not working. So the Ouija board, I would say, was my
is your most entertaining.
Yeah.
What about the most dangerous?
Oh, the most dangerous. These are the ones where you think you have a cure for a medical ailment, and this is on sort of the what they call alternative medicine. By the way, have you ever heard of alternative math? Of course not, because it doesn't exist. Have you ever heard of alternative physics? Of course not, because there's no such thing. Yet somehow we all want to believe that there's something called alternative medicine. There's either the stuff that works and the stuff that doesn't. And the stuff that works, let's call medicine, and the stuff that doesn't, let's call that quackery. Let's just simply be honest about this, okay?
Believe it or not, we have that in my profession too, alternative comedy. It's called not funny.
Not funny. So that then it's dangerous. It's not dangerous to others, it's dangerous to yourself. Because you think there's a cure that someone claims is real but has not undergone rigorous scientific testing, and then you forego treatment that you get through other means, and you end up dying sooner or dying or becoming maimed or crippled because you didn't seek the attention that it required.
Right.
So that's where the danger comes in. So that's why I don't jump all over people who do, you know, their tarot card readings and palm readings, and I don't distract myself by people who want to believe that's real. But when the medicine steps in there, that's a problem.
Okay.
You are listening to Star Talk Radio, the Cosmic Queries Hour. And I'm here with Leanne Lord. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson. And we'll continue after the break. Back on Star Talk Radio, I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson, your host. I'm an astrophysicist by day and Star Talk Radio announcer by night.
Love it.
No, actually, an astrophysicist can be anything they want at night because nobody's looking. Everyone else is asleep. We're awake contemplating the cosmos. So we've culled questions from the internet, and these are all related to pseudoscience.
Yes.
And Leanne, let me just ask you, do you lean towards anything that you think might be pseudoscience?
I don't think so. I might have before I met you.
I don't want to put you on the spot.
I think it's been educated out of me.
Oh, I like that phrase. To get something educated out of you. Oh, can we use that? We got to use that.
Well, be my guest. Absolutely.
Oh, my God. Get the pseudoscience educated out of you.
There we go.
All right.
That's why we do this.
So you got a question.
I do. It's actually almost maybe
Questions from listeners.
These are questions from listeners.
Our give back in a way, yeah. too. We want to make sure you're a part of what we do here.
And so. I love the interaction uh-huh. with fans. This is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
This is a question from Brian Shields. And he wants to know sort of what spurred the use of items such as crystals in the realm of pseudoscience. I mean, were users attracted to their physical beauty, or did they just assume that it had more enduring qualities?
What an awesome question. That's a great question. So what we have found in the history of cultures is that civilizations tended to gather together and cherish. That might overstate what it actually is in some cases, but establish a higher level of curiosity for some things over other things.
Okay. Right?
So it's a curiosity factor because it's different. And By the way, there's a famous quote from Isaac Newton, and he imagines himself sitting at the water's edge. And as the waves come upon the shore, he says, "I feel like a child on the shore, picking up one pebble over another just because it looks slightly more interesting than the rest. Yet the ocean of truth lay undiscovered before me." So there he is, humbled by the fact that he knows there's a lot more to discover. Mm-hmm. But there he is, nonetheless curious about the little things that are in his arm's reach, one pebble being shinier than the next. So over history, what we've done is you pick up shiny things. You pick up...
I love that deeply scientific explanation.
Shiny things.
We pick up shiny things.
We wear shiny things. Jewelry is typically shiny.
Yes.
You yourself are wearing shiny things,
shiny,
okay?
Little shiny things,
so
yes.
I'm not talking about only ancient civilizations. I'm talking about modern life. So we find silver, gold. It goes to high luster. We like these things. We collect them. They are different from other things you find in nature. We also, crystals are the world's first transparent solid things. Think about that.
Yeah, I just did the head cock.
Yeah. Like, yeah, the dog that just heard the high-pitched scream.
The world's first solid transparent things.
Yes. Normally you think of solid. It's solid. Nothing goes through it. And now I've got a solid thing that light can pass through. That's an awesome thought.
That is pretty cool.
And there it is in nature. There's quartz. Quartz crystal is transparent to visible light. Now, take that fact and say, well, can you do anything with it? Do you realize this even worked its way into early ideas of the cosmos? So, before we knew that Earth went around the sun and this sort of thing, it was like the sun goes around the Earth and everything goes around the Earth because Earth is the center of the entire universe. Well, we know there are different distances because some move faster on the sky than others. But what holds them up there? What keeps them there? So guess what held them there? Something has to hold them there and completely surround the Earth, but you have to be able to see through it to see the planets that are farther away than they are. This was the birth of the crystalline spheres.
Okay.
Crystal, not because crystal is a special form of mineral. Crystal because the damn thing is transparent, and you can see through it to the rest of the cosmos. And so there was the crystalline spheres out there. So crystals were valued simply because they were different and they were transparent. And we always, it's a natural part of human curiosity to pick up that which is different and bring it home.
Well, mom and dad aren't always happy about that. So, I don't know, honey. A little transparent.
So that's, in fact, if you want to think about it in another kind of way, those are the seeds of the birth of science. The fact that we are curious about some things that are different than others. If you look at the, I think it was the Inuit, whatever is the culture that that frequented the shores of Greenland.
Okay.
And as we know, Greenland is mostly glacier, at least for now. Right. There is the Cape York meteorite, which is currently the largest meteorite in captivity. And
being held against its will, everybody.
It is at the American Museum of Natural History in our meteorite hall. That meteorite was cherished by the local peoples. And in fact, iron meteorites have been the entire source of metal for civilizations that did not otherwise have access to iron ores beneath Earth's surface. So Native American tribes, the Inuit, I think Eskimo is not the proper term these days, but the terms that described the coastal peoples who fished for food and lived in the Arctic regions, the metal that's in those cultures in almost every case is metal carved off of rocks that didn't match anything else in their environment, and those were iron meteorites that were exposed on the surface that had been there for tens of thousands, possibly in some cases, millions of years.
Mm. So something different.
Yes.
Nice.
That was a long answer, man.
No, okay. But that's great.
Okay, all right.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want another question?
Actually, the meteorite would not have been there for millions of years because continental drift would have redistributed where everything is. So if you found a meteorite in the ground, it would have fallen within the last tens of thousands of years. Typically.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So you just footnote it yourself.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Vyasa.
Caveat. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a question.
Yeah.
And this might be a little controversial. Mm-hmm. This is from Richard Conant.
And again, the theme is pseudoscience.
The theme is, this is definitely pseudoscience. Mm-hmm. And it begins with, Mr. Tyson, is there hope for America when 46% believe in creationism? Yeah. Are we going to edit that out?
Okay. No, that's fine. There is hope for America if 47% believe in creationism, provided that that 47% doesn't require that the other 53% believe it as well.
Aye, there's the rub, sir.
Yeah. So the problem is not what people believe. This is a free country. Believe what you want. I will not tell you what to believe. What I will say to you is that if you want your belief, which is not based on objective truths, it's based on what are generally known as revealed truths. There's some sacred document mm-hmm. that someone has truth revealed to them through whatever forces that you recognize in your religion. And there are many of these. There's Joseph Smith's documents mm-hmm. and there's the Quran. There are all these revealed truths. If those truths conflict with objectively verifiable truths and you want to teach that as science, that's the beginning of the end of the technological foundation of your culture. I just alert you of the consequences of this. I will not tell you what to think or how to think it. I just want to say, if you do this, then that's what happens.
You have been warned.
You've been warned.
Proceed at your peril.
Yeah, you've been warned. And by the way, there's no tradition of atheists or scientists knocking down the Sunday school door, telling the preacher, that might not necessarily be true. No, there's no one trying to change church religious right. curriculum.
Right.
It's not happening. So to have religious communities try to alter a science curriculum to meet their needs, that's a profound imbalance of what the historical relationship has been between religious communities and scientific communities over the centuries. So the problem is not that's not the problem. The problem is when people want to learn science, think that creationism is science, they have been removed from the frontier of cosmic discovery.
Mm. Wow, very nicely done.
Oh,
I like that. I like that. And I, you know what? I think this might actually lead into, and maybe you've already answered this in a way, but I wanted to ask it anyway. And this is from Brandon Rogers. He said, what should people be doing more often in order to combat the rapid spread of pseudoscience? And he suggests take more classes on skepticism.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So we always assumed in the sort of educated scientific community that if you learn science and you learn the laws of physics, that you won't be susceptible to the pseudoscience. That it's
really?
kind of an inoculation against it. And largely that's true. If you're scientifically literate, it is a kind of a vaccine against those who would exploit your ignorance of natural law for their own gain. All right. You know what I'll do after the break? I'll give you my recipe for fighting pseudoscience. You're still sticking around, I presume.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, thank you. All right, you're listening to Star Talk Radio. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson. We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
We're back on Star Talk Radio. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson. Joining me as my co-host for this Star Talk Cosmic Queries Hour is Leanne Lord. Leanne, great to have you.
Oh, great to be here.
Professional comedian. Do you say comedian or comedian?
Whatever you want to say, as long as I'm getting paid to show up.
Getting paid.
I'm good.
Yeah. So comedian is the feminized version
of
comedian.
It is. It's pretty. I don't mind it. My feminism doesn't extend to being offended by that.
Yeah. It's actually a pretty word.
It is. I'll take it.
Yeah. So where did we leave off in the last segment? Well, there was a question about...
We were talking about pseudoscience and what can we be doing to sort of combat that? And is there something, I guess, in the toolbox?
In the toolbox, exactly. So first, science literacy, just as a state of mind, is quite the vaccine against those who speak pseudoscientific ways. And you listen to them and you immediately notice where the arguments fail, and then you just walk the other way. There's an old saying, if an argument lasts more than 5 minutes, then both sides are wrong.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Congress hasn't heard this.
No, they argue for much longer than 5 minutes, which means both sides are wrong. So you've got this. So here, I think in addition to just learning how science works, there's an awesome wiki page. An awesome wiki page on what's it called? It's ways that your cognition can fail.
Okay.
Okay. Cognitive failures. Maybe just a Google search on cognitive failures. There's a whole list. Okay. And you read it and you say, my gosh.
I'm an idiot.
The human brain is not good at taking data. The human brain is awful at interpreting what it experiences. But we've known this since second grade.
Yeah.
We all played telephone, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
It would take two or three people before the story was completely warped and distorted.
And you're being kind.
And what happened is information goes in one ear, and when it came out your mouth, it was different.
Mm-hmm.
So this, our susceptibility as humans to cognitive failure is extraordinary. So I think once you know you're susceptible and you read the list of ways you can be susceptible, I think that could take care of most of these.
Hmm.
Most of these, the attraction that people might have to what is ultimately false pseudoscience.
Okay.
And I'll give you a quick example. You know that people say, I have a lucky number. Comes up every time. Right?
Okay.
And in fact, when I won the lottery last week, I knew it when I bought the ticket. Okay. So you can say, well, that's the I'm special error, right?
But I am special.
Here's a good example. Take 1,000 people, give them a coin, heads, tails, coin. Tell them to flip the coin.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's got heads, they remain standing. Tails, you sit down. All right? That's about how many left? 500 left, because I started with 1,000.
Right.
And it's what they call a fair coin, 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you do it again for who remains. All right? It's 500 left, flip a coin, 250 are standing. And you keep doing this. And then 125 are standing. And then 60 are standing. 30, 15, 8.
I'm impressed
Four.
By your division skills on the spot.
Two. And then there's one person who flipped heads 10 consecutive times. And that person wins. All right? Who does the press go to? Does it go to all the losers? No. They all go to that person. And they say, How do you feel about this? That person will likely say, you know, I felt the head's energy about halfway through, so I knew I was going to win.
Yeah.
And they say, wow, he had this power of knowledge. Did they ask the other people who had exactly the same feeling?
Mm-hmm.
No, because we're not interested in losers. We're only interested in the winner. So.
Different and shiny.
Every time you do this experiment, somebody's going to basically flip heads 10 consecutive times. Have you ever flipped heads 10 consecutive times in your life? No. All right. But if you did that experiment about 1,000 times,
I'd be the person.
Chances are you would, in those 1,000 times, chances are you'd flip heads 10 consecutive times.
Well, I know what I'm doing for the rest of the day.
So there's always going to be a winner here, but that doesn't mean the person who won is special. But you're that person. You think somehow the gods were on your side. So that's one example of a way to misthink information that's laid bare right in front of you. So you study that page. So every science class should come along with, here's how the brain fails you. And this will double down on the vaccine that being scientifically literate can do for you.
So that double whammy there, that's a good start for you.
Oh, yeah. And okay. then you see it in others and you have the urge to try to fix it. Right? Then they'll tell two people. And so on.
You could
wipe this out in a week.
Wow.
Because it doesn't take higher learning to see the susceptibility of the human mind. And by the way, scientists are also susceptible to this. It's just that we know we're susceptible.
Okay.
And we invent methods and tools to reduce our susceptibility because we're honest with ourselves about it. That is what science is. That's what the scientific method is. Scientific method is not hypothesis, testing, blah, blah, blah. It can be that, but that's not what it is at its heart. At its heart is do whatever it takes to not fool yourself into thinking that one thing is true when another thing is true.
This is also very good relationship advice, everybody. This has multiple uses here. Can I add
a
question
to
this? Trying to figure out how the brain fails.
Yeah.
What age do we start this?
Oh, well, let's do that when we come back from our break. You're listening to Star Talk Radio. Neil deGrasse Tyson will be right back. We are back at Star Talk After Hours. Actually, I think of it as that, but it's really Star Talk Cosmic Queries. And I'm being helped out here by my co-host, Leanne Lord. Leanne.
Yes.
You're an awesome question reader.
Thank you. No pressure.
Quick questions from the internet. These, I think, were from Facebook. Is that right? Yeah. Yeah. And you handed me a question right when we had no time to answer it. What was it? Just before the break.
Well, my question is, you were talking about the ways to sort of inoculate yourself against pseudoscience. And you were saying that we should study how the brain fails. You know, if you've got that, you've got half the battle. And my question to that is, well, at what age do we start introducing this?
Oh, in utero. Yeah.
Oh.
No.
Wow. Okay. So the little baby Einstein tapes. This is how your brain's going to fail you. It's not even here yet.
No.
Here's how it's going to fail.
Here's in my experience interacting with kids. Kids are not susceptible to pseudoscience. The pseudoscience that they ever talk about is because they hear adults mentioning it. All right. Kids are just simply naturally curious about the natural world, and they ask natural questions about the natural world. And then the adult says, oh, the moon is in the wrong house, and the Jupiter is aligns with Mars. And they hear this. But left to themselves, as kids curious about their environment, they are the least susceptible to pseudoscientific thinking or to mystical thinking or to magical thinking. And what I have found is, now this is not a formal study, it's just my sort of walks through life. When puberty sets in and life gets really complicated.
It ruins us all.
Does he like me? Does he not like me? Will I have money for this? Will I be hurt? Will I do well on my test? All of a sudden life descends on you and you realize you're not actually in control of the things that are going on in your life.
Right.
And so there's a susceptibility to that which asserts it can bring control to your life outside of your own initiative to do so. These are rub these crystals and you'll heal yourself. Read your horoscope and it'll make your day better. Walk this way, talk this way, chant this way.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you believe that now the world is not just you and your control of yourself, that there are these forces that you get to blame when things don't go well in your life. So I would say the critical phase is basically middle school, when hormones start kicking in and they're susceptible to thinking that they are not in control of their destiny.
Okay. And they're looking at these crutches.
Yes, exactly. They're emotional, intellectual crutches of life.
Wow.
Shed the crutches, walk on your own power, become scientifically literate. Oh, that'd be make an awesome poster.
It would. It would.
Yeah.
All I can say is, dude, where were you when I was 12? Where were you, sir? Wow, that's great. Okay.
So what else you got?
All right. I have a question from Ed Travis. And wow, Ed, really? Ed says, my wife wants a machine that can translate dreams into physical images. How impossible is this?
That's awesome. That sounds like something that would show up on the movie, on the Fox series Fringe.
Yes.
They're always like reading minds and making the mind do things. Mm-hmm. Why not?
Really?
Yeah. I think that neuroscience is in its infancy today.
Okay.
And I think that is one of the most fertile scientific frontiers that currently exists. Neuroscience. You know, we know the brain, you know, we're a sack of chemistry is what we are as humans.
Sack of chemistry.
A conscious sack of chemistry.
You are a walking t-shirt slogan manufacturer, sir.
Well, humans, we're conscious sacks of chemistry. We know we are because that's why medicine works, all right? You put chemicals in you and it changes what you think, how you feel, how alert you are. What do you think caffeine is? It's influencing your alert state as Landlord holds up her cup of Dunkin' Donuts coffee. Okay. So I noticed Dunkin' Donuts, not Starbucks. Is you're on a budget now?
Wow. Yeah, because what I'm making here is Star Talk.
Oh, really doesn't
finance my right, higher coffee desire.
We'll have to cover you on the next cup of coffee. So I think that's a brilliant idea and a brilliant suggestion. And I would put that as a sort of science fiction-y, but still within reach.
Wow.
Still within reach. What would be great is if it was a live image of what your dream was. And then, well, maybe you wouldn't want that, actually.
So you have the dream and then wake up and see the dream.
Could, or others can watch you dream in real time.
That sounds a little invasive.
That's a little invasive, so maybe not.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. Okay, let's pull back on that one.
Yeah, that's
right. But maybe you can put it in your library of dreams and relive them by just popping in the disc.
Right.
Right, right. So brain activity is simply chemicals and chemical interactions among neurons. And given that, you once we know what a certain kind of chemical interaction means – in terms of an image, in terms of words, in terms of faces, you just draw it up. Have a little machine that draws it. That would be the cool future of neuroscience. When we come back, more of Star Talk Radio. Star Talk Radio's Cosmic Queries. Leanne Lord is my official question reader.
Yes.
And today's topic is pseudoscience. And we've got questions from our listener base.
Yes.
You call it a fan base. I don't think of it as they're listeners.
Okay, listener base.
I mean, if they're fan, you know, they're listeners. Maybe they are fans, but I think of them as listeners.
They are listeners. They are partners in education.
There you go. Yeah. How to bureaucratize the answer. Okay.
Now, I kind of, if you don't mind, I want to backtrack just a little bit. You were very kind in saying, you know, when you thought sort of we should be educating kids about inoculating themselves against pseudoscience.
Mm-hmm.
But you said that you know, little kids, in your experience,
yeah.
Don't really engage in magical thinking.
Or they're not susceptible to
they're
pseudoscience.
They're not susceptible.
Right, right.
And I don't know about that, you know, because I
Why?
Mean, listen, kids have magical blankets. They have imaginary friends.
Yeah.
No parent wants their kid to have an imaginary friend.
Okay.
You know, because you said most of this comes from the parents, and I'm so and there's stuff like that doesn't.
Okay, so I would put a line in the sand between what people do that is that is the expression of their imagination, maybe gone a little too far.
Okay.
And things that you do that you think are actually controlling your behavior and conduct. If you think there's a monster under the bed, you could actually check for that. You're just too afraid to. All right? Okay. Is that pseudoscience or is it you're not really in control of your imagination at that point? I can tell you that adults don't worry about monsters under the bed.
Unless they've been imbibing something really strong.
So I am not worried about the monster under the child's bed influencing them as an adult. This is this childhood thinking about fairies and kingdoms and the kiss of the prince and all of this. This is, if you put a child out in the middle of the street and you say, put them out in the open and say, what do you believe is affecting your life right now? They're not going to say the fairies. They're not going to say the monster under the bed. You take an adult who is susceptible to pseudoscience, they're going to give a list of things that they will assert is in control of their life or influencing their life that they cannot influence. And so that it's a different kind of thing. So I agree. You have kids with great imagination, and it's fun, and it's the seeds of so much fantasy and literature, even.
Stephen King.
Yeah, Stephen King, if you want to get bloody. But right. But Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, if that's not an LSD trip, I don't know what is. And it's Pinocchio, his nose grows. These are fantasy stories, and kids love to have fun and to play. But what I'm saying is we don't need to stop them from thinking about a monster under the bed because that doesn't carry into adolescence.
Okay.
None of that carries into adolescence.
Okay.
Don't step on the crack, you break your parents' back. No, that doesn't – it stops. I don't need to stop that with other efforts. It stops itself because they simply outgrow it.
Okay.
I'm talking about stuff that adults don't even outgrow.
Okay.
And that list of those things you don't find in children.
Okay. Okay.
Kids are not afraid of black cats. They want to pet the kitty until an adult says, that's a black cat. That's right. Bad.
Okay.
So they got to be told by someone who's older and not as wise to be afraid of the black cat.
Well, I
you got any more questions? How many questions?
I do.
You got a whole sheet there.
I do have another question.
Go for it.
I do. Okay. All right. This is from Bora Vi. Mm-hmm. And they want to know, I used to watch the TV show Ancient Aliens. And at one point, they've stated that Bigfoot may be a prisoner from outer space, much like how England used to send prisoners to Australia. Do you think we would eventually send prisoners into space? Wow, that was a long way around to get to that.
I'm thinking Ancient Alien.
Wow, that's a long way around.
Okay, so first, it'd be kind of cool if Bigfoot, if some powerful alien civilization said, Earth, there's a good place to send our criminals. Let's send Bigfoot there. I wonder, what crime did Bigfoot commit?
Stole a candy bar.
You know, one of who's it? Mitch Hedberg, the late comedian Mitch Hedberg. You know what he said of Bigfoot? He said, "You know what's even scarier than Bigfoot would be if Bigfoot is actually out of focus." Every picture we have of Bigfoot, it's a fuzzy photo.
Oh, that's hilarious.
If he's actually out of focus, that would be really scary. So, yeah, I would hope Earth is not some prison colony for misbehaved aliens from another planet.
Though it would explain a lot.
I would like to believe that I believe in the future of neuroscience, and I think if you go far enough in the future, we would find a way to cure people who are career criminals so that we would not need prisons for them at all.
Wow.
Therefore, we wouldn't need to look for a planet upon which to send them. And the historical analogy here is England sending their prisoners to Australia, an isolated continent island in the middle of the southern hemisphere Pacific.
But now, isn't that the slippery slope? Doctor?
Yes, it is.
Because if we start correcting criminal behavior,
what is a crime in one generation versus another? You're absolutely right. That's a whole other show.
It is.
Leanne, thanks for being on Star Talk.
Thank you for having me back.
After Hours. This is Star Talk.
After Hours.
The Cosmic Query segment. So, you've been listening to Star Talk Radio. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson. And I bid you farewell. And as always, to keep looking up.